Okay, we're almost halfway. This is the fifth verse. And we have covered verses number 1, 2, 3, and 4. We'll do for the Sunday feast. And this is number 5. And this starts to get into a little bit of a different mode here. And it's quite interesting because it's very fundamental to our practice of devotional service. And this is more like sadhusanga. Okay, so we'll go right into the verse. Should we do Jai Ranamadava? Yeah? Or verse? Verse or Jai Ranamadava? Somebody scream out an answer. Verse! Verse! Jai Ranamadava! Okay. All right, verse is first. Okay, Jai Radha Madhava will do through the Mangalacharana prayers. Om Agyan Timirandasya Gena Jana Salakaya Chaksuhun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Staptitam yena bhutale swayam rupa kadam mayam tadati svapadantikam bandeham si guru si yuta pade kamalam si gurun vaishnavam scham si rupam sagjatam sahagana raganatham vidham sajivam sadvaitam sarvadutam parijana sahitam krishna chaitanya devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitamscha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Suti Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyaevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namaho Namaha Namaum Vishnu Padhaya Krishna Prasthamya Bhutale Shri Mate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pacharine Nirvisesa Sunyavadi Pastyatyadhe satarinam Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Krishneti Yasya Giritam Manasandrityetam Dikshasite Praniti Vischa Bhajatam Misham Surusaya Bhajanam Jvijana Anayam Manyam Nadadi Suryam Riddham Ipsitam Sangalabdhya Krishna the holy name of Krishna. E.T. Thus. Yasya. Of whom? Giri. In the words or speech. Tam. Him. Manasa. By the mind. Adrityata. One must honor. Diksha. Initiation. Asti. There. There is. Chet. If. Pranati be. By obeisances. Cha. Also. Bhajatam. Engaged in devotional service. Isham. Unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Susrusaya. By practical service. Bhajana Vigyanam. One who is advanced in devotional service. Anayam. Without deviation. Anya Nidda Adi. Of blasphemy of others. Etc. Sunya. Completely devoid. Ridham. Whose heart. Ipsita. Desirable. Sangha. Association. Labdhya. By gaining. Okay, so now we're going to understand the different types of devotees and how to associate. Translation. One should mentally honor the devotee who chants the holy name of Lord Krishna. One should offer humble obeisances to the devotee who has undergone spiritual initiation, diksha, and is engaged in worshiping the deity. And one should associate with and faithfully serve that pure devotee who is advanced in undeviated devotional service and whose heart is completely devoid of the propensity to criticize others. So that's the translation. The three kinds of devotees are mentioned here. The neophyte, the middle stage, and the uttama, or the higher stage. These three are categories as kanista, or neophyte devotee. Sometimes we say prakriti bhakta, or materialistic devotee. Madhyama adhikari, middle devotee, preacher. And uttama adhikari, he is the 100% pure devotee who is completely purified and is on the highest platform of spiritual realization. So this verse describes these three and the characteristics and qualities of each of them, like that. So this is, the thing is, we should understand how to relate to each of these three. And we should also know what is our position within these three categories like that. The Kanista Adhikari, or is it considered to be the person who is on the beginning stage of bhakti, or sometimes it's described on the lowest stage of bhakti, like that, does not understand the all-pervading nature of the Supreme. Example is he can't see God within and without. He can only see God in the deity. That's all. He sees things separately. He sees God and he sees his energy as two different complete things. He sees this is material. God is there in the deity. He appreciates the spiritual master but doesn't know how to behave with other devotees. He's proud of his own worship, and he thinks he's more advanced than others. I remember when we first joined the Hare Krishna movement, we used to call it pure devotee syndrome, PDS. Afflicted with this disease, thinking, I've been in Krishna consciousness 1 year, I got it. I'm fixed. Others don't really know how advanced I am. And he thinks, you know, yeah, the other devotees, they're okay, but usually they just get in my way. And the deity, it's everything, and the spiritual master is everything, and the karmis, they're just rotten materialists, poo. We don't care about them. He's not interested in preaching, he just thinks he's the best. He finds the qualities of the materialists attractive. And sometimes he sees the devotees as being somewhat, you know, dysfunctional. His mind is not fixed. He has a chance to elevate himself if he engages in deity worship. But he worshiped the deity, but he cannot understand that that same deity that he's worshiping on the altar is in the heart of all living beings. Therefore, he sees things in a very limited or materialistic way. This is called neophyte. Sometimes we say those who like to fight. Devotees who argue with each other, that's a neophyte. Devotees don't argue or fight. You can't find people on the second or third class, first class platform. They're not interested in argument and fighting. They're interested in serving and working together in devotional service. They avoid that kind of conflict because it interferes with their devotional service. They tolerate it or distance themselves from that and engage in devotional service. A neophyte likes to argue, likes to fight because he thinks he's the best. Okay. So he's affected by karma and he is interested in sense gratification. He's also affected by impersonalism and Mayavadi ideas. And therefore, he thinks that some of those philosophies have some value. He takes karma and Mayavad, or what we say, Gyan principles, and mixes them in with bhakti. He sees these also on the same level like that. So this is called neophyte. And Prabhupada, in one purport in the Srimad Bhagavatam, third canto, 21st chapter, 31st verse, describes that one should get off that platform. There's no real progress there. One has to get away from the neophyte platform because one cannot perform devotional service steady, and eventually if one stays on that platform, one will leave Krishna consciousness. They call materialista bhakta or prakriti. They have a tendency to be envious of other devotees. Sometimes they become envious of those who are more advanced than them, thinking that those persons are simply, you know, proud. That's all. So this is a materialistic devotee, and this is called the neophyte stage, the lowest stage. You can read more about that qualities from verse 11, canto 11, verse 47 in chapter 2 of canto 11. 11-247, the lowest stage. So, they worship the deity. They don't behave very well with other devotees. They're not really interested in preaching. And their faith is very soft and unsteady. And they're easily tripped up. And they're always making mistakes. Yet they think differently. So this was, I don't see it so much now, but it was very common when our movement first started, that there was so much power and energy and facility when Prabhupada was personally present that devotees were just swept away in it. But still, they still had their material tendencies and didn't be able to see them and thinking they were advanced devotees like that. And so Prabhupada had to deal with a lot of that. So that's called Kanista, Prakriti Bhakta, a neophyte devotee. We don't find fault with that, but we at the same time we understand that that person must raise themselves up, and how they do it by following the rules and regulations of worship in the form of deities like that. Usually we engage them in deity worship. And that way they become purified of that tendency and start to understand the higher principles of devotional service like that. So that's the Kanista Adhikari. Any questions on Kanista or Neophyte? Yes. That means they're moving towards the Madhyam platform. They're still afflicted by the Kanista tendencies, but they're moving forward. It's a gradual process. But the main quality of a Kanista is, you know, he thinks he's advanced. And he thinks everyone else is okay. Some are more advanced than me, but not too many. Hare Krishna. I'm laughing because I used to think like that. Yes. You can't stay there because it's offensive. It can be an offensive platform. A Kanista's tendency has envy towards others, still afflicted by the principle of envy. You see, Prabhupada says, if you don't preach, you will become envious. He told that to Jamuna. I was reading Jamuna's diary. He says, if you don't take up the process of preaching to others, you will be envious. It's just the nature of the conditioned souls. Unless we give what we receive, we will not be able to appreciate others and will be envious of others. It's just natural. And he said that twice in two different occasions. It's in writing also. So Prabhupada makes that point. If you don't preach, see the second cloud platform, or the Madhyaman platform, is the platform of preaching, where one discriminates between the devotees and the non-devotees, and we'll get into their characteristics in a few minutes, but staying on the Neophyte platform means that one is only interested in their own spiritual advancement. That's the main thing. It's me, I am the center, my advancement is the most important thing. Like that. That's Neophyte. Like that. Therefore, they don't see any need for preaching, or they don't feel any compulsion to take up that preaching mood. Yes. Chief? B, you can go next after Shiv. Okay.
You said that the best way to raise oneself out of the conditioned platform is to preach. But in order to protect
No, they have to come to that stage where preaching becomes their activity. The best way to get out of that stage is perform deity worship. And then they start developing brahminical tendencies through the process of deity worship like that. Right, it says here, pliable, yeah.
So, how do you protect oneself at the Kanishtha level in a preaching kind of atmosphere?
By association, yeah. If they associate with more advanced devotees in the mood of serving those devotees, then gradually they'll make advancement like that. It mentions here, and gradually they'll start to understand the real mentality of devotional service and start to gradually advance like that through association and through worshiping the Lord in the temple like that, following the rules and regulations carefully like that. It purifies the heart, and then they start seeing or understanding that that same deity that I'm worshiping is in everybody's heart. That's the understanding. When you come to the second class platform, then you're fixed in the understanding that Krishna is everywhere within the energy. He's there in the form of the deity. But most important, he's in the heart of every living entity. Therefore, then you start to treat each living entity accordingly, like that, based on that principle of seeing Krishna in the heart, or understanding Krishna's presence in the heart of all living entities. That's the preaching platform. Beatrice?
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned that the Kanishtha takes beyond principles and mixes them with bhakti.
Say again?
You mentioned that the Kanishtha takes principles of gyan and mixes them with bhakti.
Yeah.
And I wondered what these principles of gyan are and how to avoid mixing them with bhakti.
principles of Gyan is that one starts to cultivate knowledge for the sake of knowledge. But now, in other words, one collects knowledge or thinks that knowledge is actually the goal. That's a principle. A Gyani is a one, Gyan means one who's fixed in knowledge. But the Gyanis use knowledge simply to detach themselves from material activities and just focus themselves on being, what we say, fixed in the impersonal understanding of God. You see, without the service attitude, these Gyan principles are still strong. One has to develop this sense of service to the Lord, to the spiritual master, and to the Vaishnavas, and to people in general. So a devotee relates to four types of people. They serve each of these four categories in the mood in different ways, but each of the moods or each of the ways is through serving them. Serving the Vaishnavas by becoming friends with the Vaishnavas and inspiring them in their own devotional service, sharing Krishna consciousness. Serving the Lord by offering our devotion and love to the Lord. Serving the spiritual master by following carefully his instructions. Serving the non-devotees by preaching Krishna consciousness. So the mood of service is there on that platform. So the Gyan principle is, I'm advanced because I have scriptural knowledge. They might read the books and just collect all kinds of knowledge. Also can recite verses. There was one story where, this is somewhat related, where one devotee, he just came into the movement, he's around for a little while, he learned the whole Bhagavad Gita by heart. The whole Bhagavad Gita, all the verses by heart. 700 verses. So it was impressive to the other devotees. So they brought him to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada was there, and they introduced him, and they said, Prabhupada, this devotee knows the whole Bhagavad Gita by heart. He can recite all the verses. Prabhupada didn't even look at him and says, is there any service he can do? That's all. Give him some service to do, and then he could be more useful. So the point was he was proud of that knowledge. So, you know, the Gyan principle is you collect knowledge and you become proud of it. You think you know so much. You can recite verses, you can, you know, chant mantras like that. So, but they don't understand the goal of the knowledge. Is the goal of the knowledge is not a knowledge itself, but the goal of the knowledge is to understand that knowledge by applying it in the practical application of service to the Lord, devotees, to people in general like that. That's the purpose of the knowledge. So that's a Gyan principle. And Mayavad principle is that I'm chanting the holy names of the Lord, but beyond the chanting of the holy name there is, you know, God in his unmanifested form. He's manifested himself in the holy name, but higher than that is his impersonal aspect of him. And that comes by not understanding the principle of bhakti, by not engaging in devotional service with knowledge. As Bhuta Bhavana Prabhu was saying, you should understand why you're doing, how to do what you're doing and why you're doing. There should be understanding. Why am I doing this? What is my purpose? My purpose is to please the Lord and to become purified in Krishna consciousness. There's a purpose behind everything we do. That way, as Bhuta Bhavana Prabhu pointed out, we'll avoid those things that are contrary to these principles. But a neophyte, he'll mix in, you know, these the different Mayavad concepts. It's very prominent within our Indian congregations, especially in Western countries like America or London. You know, any sadhu that comes in, Maharaj, you know, the tendency is to honor all sadhus. But Prabhupada talks about, you know, when he was first, before he was first introduced to Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, his friend Narendra Nath Mulik, said, Abhay, come, we'll meet a nice sadhu. Prabhupada said, I saw so many of these sadhus. Because when he grew up in his family, his father was very inclined to honoring any holy man that came in. He said there was no less than 3 or 4 holy men living at my father's home at a time. And he would supply food. He would give them hashish to smoke, because that's what they smoke hashish also. Prabhupada talks about that. You know, we're just honoring all sadhus and not seeing any discrimination. There is sadhu. A sadhu is one who cuts away material life. A sadhu is not someone who speaks nicely philosophy, dresses in a certain way, smiles every time you look at him, and has his thing ready to collect as much money as you're ready to give him. That's not a sadhu. That's somebody else. The point is that, and Prabhupada was asked by one person, Swamiji, we have so many holy men, sadhus, saints in India, but we have so many problems. Prabhupada's answer. The problem is, you don't know who a sadhu is. That's what he said. Yeah. So one has to understand. Therefore, that's one of the tendencies in our society, is people don't discriminate between different types of sadhus. Well, who is a real sadhu, and who is someone who is just practicing yoga, or has some tendencies towards devotion, but it's not worshiping the Supreme Personality of Godhead like that. So one has to make that discrimination. Yes, Prabhu?
I have a question. You said that Mahadeva Vikari is a preacher.
Oh.
Sometimes we see that sometimes preachers, they become proud or even fall down.
Yeah.
So, it seems like a contradiction, because Mahadeva Vikari, he shouldn't be puffed up for the...
No, he couldn't. But you shouldn't see anybody else as puffed up. If you see other people as puffed up, that means that's not good. We can't really tell if a person is puffed up or not. You can tell simply by the way they conduct themselves in the day-to-day life, how they act and interact with others. Then you can understand what if they're proud or not. I mean, Prabhupada would speak so strongly, he would shake the room. And sometimes people will think, he's so proud, he's just condemning everybody. And Prabhupada said, no, I'm not condemning everybody. I'm just telling you what Krishna says. You're a fool. Krishna says, avajanti mam mudham, manusim tanam aspartam, param bhavam ajanatam, mama bhuta maheshvara. Fools deride me when I come in this human form. So Prabhupada was so strong, and I got that question so many times. Your spiritual master, he just condemns everything. And Prabhupada said, yes, they're worth condemning. He was giving us the point right there. He wasn't going to compromise just to patronize. And people were affected by that. You know, people who couldn't understand where he was coming from. He was coming from the platform of discriminating between this is bhakti, and this looks like bhakti, but it's not. The pure devotee can see something that is not, that appears to be, and therefore Prabhupada spoke very strongly. So people say, yeah, your spiritual master was proud. So speaking strongly doesn't make you proud. Speaking strongly is a feature of service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But speaking strongly means to apply that according to time, place, and circumstance. So, not that speaking strongly is used always in every case. No. One has to learn to speak effectively, and strong preaching is part of effective preaching. So, a person who may speak like that may look like they're very proud like that. How do you understand they're proud or not? How they deal with each other on the day-to-day basis, then you can understand whether that person is actually proud or not. That's the real understanding. How they deal with everyone. And when they get up and speak very strongly, it's not an indication of pride. It could be. It could be. But that's not the way to judge. Better not to judge others. If we're always just focusing on ourselves, we'll be able to see things more clearly. And as it says here, the highest platform is not to find fault with others. A preacher will have to find fault with a person's activity, but not the person. He'll divide the person from the activity and condemn the activity and not the person. Prabhupada never hardly ever condemned a person. Only a few times he did when persons were condemning us, and Prabhupada would turn it around and speak about him and show his disqualifications for speaking like that. But Prabhupada would always speak strongly about not so much the person, but about the material tendencies or the pretentiousness of a person who is practicing spiritual life and claims to be advanced like that. That's why Prabhupada's pranam mantra is, what is it? Nirvishesha sunyavadi paschatya desatarine. And Prabhupada, he shook up a lot of... There's a survey that was taken on categorizing various types of spiritual leaders in the history of the world. And it was one category where those saints that shook up people, and Prabhupada was in that category, shake things up. Don't let everybody stay complacent. He spoke strongly to wake people up from their idea of material, happiness, material tendencies like that. So it looks like pride, doesn't it? It'll look like pride. But it's not. It's actually compassion. But it's like a doctor knows sometimes, I just can't give a medicine. This person has to go for an operation. The medicine's not going to cure the person. This requires some surgery. So some surgery is necessary in certain cases to cure the patient from a particular type of material disease. And Prabhupada wanted to teach what is, as Bhuta Bhavana was saying, the different Pandavas. We're seeing so many things, but Arjuna was only seeing the target, although everything else was around there. Prabhupada only saw that if you're not Krishna conscious, you're going to suffer. There's no in-between like that. Hari Bol. So what can we say like that? But if a person unnecessarily finds fault with others through the process of preaching, then they may also commit offenses. And then they may also fall down. So a person can fall down by committing offenses or thinking that I know so much. Krishna says, Sarvasitaham Riddhisani Visto, Matat Smitir Agyanam Apohanancha. I give you knowledge, I give you remembrance, I give you forgetfulness. A devotee knows that I can't remember anything unless Krishna allows it. I can't forget anything unless Krishna allows it. I can't do anything unless Krishna gives me the potency. That's the consciousness that keeps one fixed in devotional service. Not so much the external activity. A person is seen, understood by his dependence on Krishna in each and every situation like that. Does that answer your question? Yes, we have a few hands. Savitri Mataji, and then Prem Bhurti after that. Prabhupada taught us that we should try to preach to others, but if people are not receptive, then we should not waste time with them. Now, here's another thing. We'll find that on the quality of an uttama arikari. An uttama arikari, or a preacher, no, I'm sorry, a madhyam preacher may discriminate between who should get the mercy and who should not. And others will say, well, why are you being discriminating? Why isn't the lion giving the mercy to everybody? But a preacher will understand this person cannot accept the mercy. And therefore, why waste time like that? Why waste time? So in that case, you know, we try to offer Krishna consciousness to everyone we come in contact with in one form or another. But if someone is a mimical, if you continue to push, they become more mimical, and that causes them more and more suffering. Because then they become offensive and blasphemous. Therefore, one of the qualities of a Madhyama Arikari is he ignores those who are against Krishna consciousness. Don't waste your time. There are so many people to preach to who are eager for it. And why waste time and beat your head against the wall of someone who just doesn't want to change? Yeah. Is that okay? Does that make sense? Yeah. Any disagreements? I mean, I'm open for disagreement. Sri Devi? No.
Maharaj, sometimes, you know, just when we meet people on the street, something is easy to discriminate. But when it's our own family members, our affection makes us want to try. So where to draw the line?
Jesus Christ said, it's the hardest people you can preach to is your family. He says you have to leave home to become a good preacher. So, take heart in that statement. That familiarity breeds two things. Indifference and then contempt. Yeah. Too close, sometimes people don't take you seriously. Or just consider you, they see you in a certain way. And therefore you're trying to play the role of something else that they're not accustomed to. And then they can't relate to that. So don't waste time. The best way to preach to family members is by your example. When they see by your example that you're showing good qualities, you're kind to them, even though they're not, you know, up to any kind of standard, you should respect them for their position, for their relationship with you. That's the best way to preach to them, just by your example. Your kindness is also a form of preaching. And some people really resonate with that because that opens up their heart and then that gradually allows them to accept more and more things related to Krishna consciousness. So we should follow that also, especially with family members. Prem Murthy Prabhu. We're on verse number 5. Oh, 11247 in Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay, so Kanista. And then, Prabhupada mentions in that same purport in the Srimad Bhagavatam 3.21.31 that one must come to the Madhyamam platform. He says the International Society for Krishna Consciousness is situated on the second class platform. So what are the qualifications or what are the characteristics of a second class person on a second class platform is that there are four things: that they love God, they give their love to God, they become friends with other devotees, they develop friendship, they avoid the atheist, non-devotees, and they preach to the innocent like that. So these are the four characteristics like that. Prabhupada said our movement is on that platform like that. Avoiding atheists means then one will not become polluted by their association. Associating with the atheistic non-devotees means you're actually, you're putting yourself in a cage with fire or in a cage with a deadly animal like that. A devotee loves the Lord, and therefore when we hear someone who's blaspheming the Lord or saying that your lover does not exist, how do you feel towards that person? You want to, you know, you want to like, boom. Somebody you love, or you're trying to develop love, and they say, he doesn't exist, I don't care. You know, they speak badly, or they speak negatively. How do you feel? It hurts your heart. So therefore, in order for the heart to not to be damaged by that, one should strictly, not carefully, but strictly avoid such association. I remember we were doing Harinam in one place in America, a place called New Orleans. You're familiar with that place? Every year they have a celebration called the Mardi Gras. The Mardi Gras precedes the 40 days of Lent in the Christian tradition. And during this Mardi Gras, the idea is that just blow your brains out as much as you can, get as much sense gratification as you can, and then for the next 40 days, it's all about austerity. So, it's a pagan holiday that's been introduced as a prelude to the Lent. But nobody follows the Lent, they just follow the pagan holiday. So in this place in New Orleans is called the French Quarter, where there's just bars, nightclubs, and all kinds of entertainment. So one day we went down, we used to go there every year to do Harinam in this place. And we're chanting and dancing and going through the streets, and we would pass this one shop. And this one lady, she would come out of the shop and scream, I mean really scream at the top of her voice, "Stop!" It was like somebody was killing her. Really, she would scream as loud as she could, "Stop!" The holy name was just, you know, she couldn't hear the sound of Krishna's name. It was causing her such distress. And of course the devotees, you know, we would go around and come back the same way and pass there again. Yeah. And she would come out and, you know, would, you know, double volume the next time. So there are people who, you know, they hate the Lord. They are demons. They're very fixed on material life and see anything that's related to God as simply a threat and a waste of time. So therefore, any person who has that mentality, you devotees should avoid that. Avoid that. So, atheist non-devotees like that. There's many of them out there. And then, of course, the other qualities is that devotee wants to deliver others, so he takes up the process of preaching Krishna consciousness. Prahlad Maharaj, when he was asked by Lord Nrisimhadev to take a benediction, he refused anything. But finally, when the Lord was persistent, wanting to show his appreciation for Prahlad's love, he said, please just let me stay in this world and let me preach to the non-devotees. That's all. So if you want to get recognized by the Lord, then we have to preach. What does it mean to preach? It means to put yourself in the position that whatever service you're doing, you do it in a way that is an inspiration for others in their own Krishna consciousness. I think we also speak of preaching as being outreach, devising various types of programs to reach the non-devotees in different ways. But a person in the temple can also have a preaching mentality if they do their service in such a way that everyone sees that service. Oh, look at this beautiful painting. Who did that? It is a nice window into the spiritual world. That's preaching. The temple is so clean that when people come in, they say, wow, I've never been in such a clean place. That's preaching. When a temple is so nicely organized and everything is so nice, that's preaching. So preaching means to do our service in the most exemplary way that others become, what we say, affected by our service in a very positive way. They want to be a part of this movement like that. Devotees are kind, that's preaching. Devotees are tolerant, that's preaching. The devotees are ready to do things for others, that's preaching. A devotee is not simply always thinking about their own. The neophyte is always thinking, how am I making advancement? What am I going to do to make advancement? It's me, 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 me. A second-class devotee is thinking, he practices his, or she practices their sadhana very carefully, but then they think the rest of the day, it's about service. It's about giving Krishna consciousness to others like that. So, that's the second class. And that's the platform we're supposed to be on. These four characteristics. Any questions of these four characteristics? Yes, Ananda Varna. Statistics? What is our movement? Well, we understand one thing. There should be more preachers in our movement. Because actually, Prabhupada wanted everyone. If you're a grihastha, in that same verse, 321.31 in Bhagavatam, he says, if you're a grihastha, you open your home, you invite the sadhus, you cook prasadam, you speak on Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, you invite others to come. That's preaching. So grihasthas can preach simply by using the facilities that they have, by opening their home, establishing worship of the deities, inviting sadhus in, having discussions on spiritual life. That is wonderful. The more we do that, the more we are preaching, and we're bringing people into Krishna consciousness. So I would say, to answer your question, there's not enough. I think Bhuta Bhavan and Prabhu mentioned that everyone should be able to sit and speak the philosophy to anyone at any time. Not that you have to know so many verses, but you should be able to know the basic principles of Krishna consciousness and be able to speak. Not like, oh, well, my spiritual master, he knows everything, and I just chant Hare Krishna and do something. You know, I don't know anything. No, it's not the idea. So, percentage-wise, it's not high enough. As Bhuta Bhavana mentioned, imagine if everyone was perfectly executing their devotional service, what would be a difference in the whole world situation? Yeah. And Prabhupada said that. Prabhupada said to us, famous statement, he said, we can take over the whole world in 18 days, but you're not ready. He said that. In other words, as soon as you become purified, you can change the whole world. One pure devotee can change the whole world. Just one. And if you haven't, Prabhupada said, I have many pure devotees in my movement. So he wanted everyone to become a pure devotee and then, you know, preach Krishna consciousness to everyone like that. We should never be content by staying on the Kanista platform. We have to come to the Madhyam platform. That's the only platform of happiness. A Kanista is not happy. He can't be. Because he sees things in a limited way and he's not happy with the way things are going. He's just... So this is a Madhyama Adhikari. He will be friendly towards others, very friendly. Madhyama is friendly. Friends with devotees, avoids the atheists. Krishna is the object of love. He's merciful to others. How is he merciful? If someone asks him, please, could you do this for me? He says, okay. He's always eager to serve like that. He doesn't say, oh, I don't have any time, or, you know, you're not worth my time. He's always eager to serve. Yeah. Yes, Sri Devi. Okay. Think about it. Anything else? Any other questions? Okay. Verse 5 is, let's see, I'll give you the answer in a minute. It's verses 1 through 7 are on Vaidhi Bhakti. And this is Sadhu Sangha. It's also Bhajana Kriya, like that. Let me see here. Okay, verses 4 through 6 are Sadhu Sangha. We're on verse number 5 right now. How to associate with devotees. That's important, how to associate like that. And the mood is always service, but then again, how to discriminate between different types of devotees. And this is mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam. One should hear from and worship and serve the Uttamam. One should make friends and share Krishna consciousness with people on the same platform. And one should be compassionate towards those who are on the lesser platform. The antithesis of that is that I envy the advanced devotees. I brag about my position to my friends who are on the same level. And I just criticize those who are lower. That's mentioned in the same purport. Envious of those more advanced. He wants to show how advanced he is to his friends and equals. He just speaks about all his achievements like that. And the non-devotees, those who are there, they're just, you know, in Maya. Like that. That's the wrong way. The right way is serve the advanced, hear from them, friendship with equals, and, you know, share Krishna consciousness together. and be compassionate to those who are lesser, like that. So one has to see, discriminate between, you know, these different categories and see where you at and where are you. The Uttama Adhikari, which is the last one in this, his qualifications is, he's free from all anarthas, he's uncritical, doesn't find fault in others, he's without false ego, self-realized, strict in following the four regulative principles, disinterested in material enjoyment, seriously engaged in the Lord's service, expounds and spreads Krishna consciousness, he's a guru, he's offenseless, he makes converts. These are some of the qualities of an Uttama Adhikari. But the Uttama Adhikari cannot preach. Why? Because they see others as more advanced. Therefore, in order to preach, you have to discriminate. So, therefore, the Uttamam comes down to Madhyaman in order to preach like that. That's why we say, Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Parivrajakacharya. So Paramahansa is the Uttama platform. Parivrajakacharya is the traveling preacher. So the Paramahansa steps down in order to make some effort to spread Lord Chaitanya's movement. Otherwise, he can't preach. Because if you see everybody better than you, how are you going to preach? That's an Uttama's vision. He sees everyone better than him, even the non-devotees. He sees himself as the lowest, and he sees everyone greater than him. Therefore, he finds fault with no one. But therefore, in order to preach, he steps down to the discriminating platform, which is the second-class platform. So one should get a spiritual master on the platform of Uttama. One should seek out one's guru from that platform. But if an Uttama Adhikari is not available, one can take initiation from someone who's on the Madhyaman platform. This is also part of this verse. And then one can make progress only up to the same level at the spiritual master. But if the spiritual master progresses and starts moving towards Uttamam, the disciple can also make progress in the same way. These are more or less concessionaries that if an Uttama Adhikari is not available, one can accept guruship from one who's on the second class platform, like that. So that's mentioned also in this verse. Okay. Any more questions, comments? Yes, we got it. Oh, we got, yes, Mataji. Nice and loud.
It's not about Uttama Adhikari, but previously you mentioned that sometimes when a devotee probably glorifies himself to a friend or something like that.
He glorifies himself? He's proud of his own advancement. That's the neophyte devotee.
Maybe it was, but the question would be if someone has some success or inspired by something in Krishna consciousness and does it to a friend, it's always like glorifying himself, or how can we...
There's one word I missed. If he has some, he's making some advancement, and he is...
Sharing
he's sharing that with
friends.
Friends. And what is the question then?
Is it the same as if glorifying himself, or is there
a difference? If he's sharing Krishna consciousness with others, and if he's sharing his knowledge, it depends. It depends if he's trying to impress others by what he knows. I know so much, therefore, you know, just see how advanced I am. That type of mentality won't last. Krishna will cut it down after a while. He'll fall due to that kind of tendency. So if you're going to share something, you share it for the benefit of the person you're sharing it with, not in order to present yourself as knowledgeable. Mm-hmm. Everything we do should be done as a service. So we're trying to serve and not trying to put ourselves in a platform of being worshipped or being honored for whatever service we're doing. So it's really the motivation behind that person's. Some are honestly sharing and others are trying to impress others. Yeah, Prabhupada, sometimes he saw some kirtan leader singing, he would say, stop him from singing and give it to someone else. And then later he explained, he's just singing so he can, you know, impress others. Yeah, Prabhupada could see that. So that's that kind of danger, if that creeps in and at last, then Maya will come and make that person fall down just to teach them a lesson. But if you're honestly trying to share something with someone so you could be Krishna conscious and help others to, you know, get the benefit of that pastime or philosophy, that's Krishna conscious. Bodhyantas parasparam, kantiyantas chimam nityam, tushyanti cha ramanti cha. The thoughts of my pure devotees dwell in me. Their lives are surrendered unto me. And they derive great satisfaction and happiness in enlightening one another and conversing about me. So we enjoy talking about Krishna. We enjoy talking about philosophical principles. It makes us enthusiastic and happy and keeps our mind away from the material energy. So we enjoy that. And you're allowed to enjoy it too. It's not like, well, you should be. There used to be a thing going on in ISKCON that we're not supposed to be happy because that's Maya. Has anybody been around in the old days of ISKCON when that was around? No, maybe you're all kind of like just recently. But we used to be in the first. It's not good to be happy because happiness is Maya. We should be serious. How many people we scared away like that? You know, we're not supposed to be. And Prabhupada said, if you're not happy, you're in Maya. He said, happiness is a symptom of Krishna consciousness. So, but the devotees turned that around and said that happiness means it's about me. Therefore, if I'm happy, it's about me and it's not good, so I shouldn't be happy. Haribo. So, you know, so we enjoy Krishna's sharing. You know, someone said to Prabhupada, you know, we're here in Mayapur. Is it all right to enjoy the Dham? Prabhupada said the Dham is for the enjoying, yes. It's for spiritual enjoyment, real enjoyment. Not just, you know, that enjoyment that comes by way of, you know, material life. So if you're not enjoying Krishna consciousness, you're not going to stay in it. You got to get some happiness out of this, or else you're going to leave. It has to resonate with your desire for happiness. And so this is one of the most powerful ways to be happy, is to talk about Krishna or talk about things related to Krishna. We're talking philosophy now, but hey, We can talk about Krishna's pastimes, Mahaprabhu's pastimes. That's the nectar. That's the sweetness. The philosophy is wonderful. It's necessary. In order to understand ras, you have to understand tattva. So tattva supports ras, but ras is actually the goal. What is that ras? That ras is developing our relationship with Krishna by hearing about his pastimes and speaking about his pastimes. And then we really get attracted to Krishna more and more. That opens up the heart. So we want that. We want that. Okay. And yes, Bhuta, Bhavana Prabhu.
Do you know where in scripture it talks about the Madhyam Kanishtha, Madhyam Uttama? And how can we understand that?
It's in that 11th canto. It's also in the third canto. It's mentioned in the third canto. Kapila Dev also speaks about that. When he speaks about the process of devotional service, he mentions the different types of practitioners. But then Krishna speaks it, or actually no, it's not Krishna, it's, what is that, the nine yogendras? What is, Havi, H-A-V-I-R, Javier? He's talking to King Nimai, and he's describing these. So that's the second chapter of the 11th canto, verses 46, 47, in that area. I think it even covers 44, 45, 46, 47, 48, a whole series of verses with long purports. The purports are really long. Okay. But then go to Kapila Dev and you can get those that answer also in the third canto. Like that. Yes, Hare Krishna.
As one of the qualities of Uttama Adhikari, you mentioned that he strictly follows the regular principles.
Mm.
So could you please make a comparison regarding that with Madhyama Adhikari? Isn't he also supposed?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. He also follows the regular principles. But that's a main characteristic for the Uttamakara. He very strictly follows. You know, just like Raghunath Das Goswami was on the highest platform. Every day he would perform obeisances 1,000 times to the devotees and 2,000 times to the Lord. Every day. It says his following of regulative principles was like lines in a rock. Try to erase the lines in a rock. He was that strict. So an Uttama was like that. Their regulative principles are strict. Madhyama may also follow, but he is not as strict in his following. He may adjust for the sake of service or preaching. Like that. So, that's one of the characteristics. That requires a little more knowledge of how that's played out, but that's one of their characteristics. You can read that also in the 11th canto. I wish I could give you more on that one. But they're very, very fixed in the regulative principles. And they do it simply also as a, to teach others like that. Okay, Sri Devi? Yeah.
Maharaj, can a Madhyama Adhikari again be pulled down to the level of Kanishtha Adhikari? And if so, how does that happen?
Pull down? You mean fall down from... Uttama doesn't fall down. Huh? Can he fall down to Kanishtha? Yeah, you can. Yeah, unless you're on the highest platform, this fall down is always available. You can fall down on prema too, if you commit offenses. Jai and Vijay fell because they commit offenses to the four Kumaras. An example was given. One great sadhu, he was a very powerful preacher, and there was one lady, her name was, I forgot her name. Huh? Yeah, yeah. The one that was always chanting japa. Can you help me with this story? What was it? Rupa something. Rupa Kaviraj. He was a great philosophical teacher, and he would attract so many people, and he would speak very interesting, attract people's mind. She was fixed, and she would sit in his lectures, but she was so attached to chanting japa that she would not stop chanting japa during his lectures. So he became disturbed. Why are you chanting? You should be listening to my lecture. And she just kept chanting and just remained humble. He fell down because he criticized such a great Vaishnavi. You know. Later on, how does great souls fall down? Their material tendencies start to creep in again. The same with Ramachandra Puri. He criticized his spiritual master. When his spiritual master was in ecstasy, he didn't recognize that a state of ecstasy. He thought his spiritual master was just acting sentimental. And he started to instruct his spiritual master, Madhavendra Puri. And because of that, Madhavendra Puri, you know, rejected him. And as soon as he ended up being rejected by his spiritual master, his material tendencies started to come back again. And then he started finding fault with Vaishnavas, and then eventually he just left the association of everyone. So when we commit offenses, then material things start to filter back in again. We look at the material energy in a way that it's very attractive, and we start thinking this is nice. Maya is not so bad. It's all eulogy, that's what they say. Right. Anyway, Maya's good looking because she's a pure devotee, right? Yes?
In terms of the different levels of devotees, does it also relate to different levels of advance of spiritual strength, and is that different to empowerment? In other words...
Yeah. Narahari Sakura in his Bhajan Amrita speaks about how to understand people who have, or similarly on the same platform of practice, but there is different degrees of spiritual strength. How to understand that and how to relate to that. So that's a whole science like that. Just like it says, when you come into the room, say there's five sannyasis sitting in the room, then when you come in, you should pay your obeisances to that person who is the most advanced first. Then you have to know which one is the most advanced. If your spiritual master is sitting there, then you pay your obeisances to your spiritual master, even though he may not be the most advanced sitting amongst other sadhus. So these are all parts of the Vaishnava etiquette like that.
There is a spiritual master sitting in the room and also his spiritual master. For example, sannyas guru or something. Who should
If you can pay your obeisances to your spiritual master, because your spiritual master is approached through, his spiritual master is approached through him, like that. That's the etiquette. When it comes to our own spiritual master, it says that if you pay your obeisances to anyone before the deity, it's an offense. You can't worship anyone or honor anyone in front of the deity. But if your spiritual master walks in and you pay your obeisances, it's non-defense. Because your spiritual master is your connection to the Supreme Worshipful Lord. Therefore, he becomes your most dear object of worship.
We are also paying obeisances everywhere in our centers. The spiritual masters in front of the deities, so should we stop it?
If it's not your spiritual master, yeah, you should stop it. But if it's your Shikshu Guru, that's also considered to be your spiritual master. But if it's your initiating guru, even if you don't pay your obeisances to your spiritual master while you're worshiping the deity, it's not an offense. You can mentally honor the presence of your spiritual master as he comes in within your heart. But if you pay your obeisances, it's also acceptable. And desirable like that. The idea is that the guru is a manifestation of the Supreme Personality for the sake of guidance and service like that. So he is as good, he's as good as the Supreme Personality of Godhead to you. Just like when Prabhupada was giving the first initiation. Before then, this was in the back in 1966 when everyone was quite new in Krishna consciousness. And he was speaking that anyone who says he's God, G-O-D, he's D-O-G, dog. That's what he would say. And so he was speaking strongly against anyone who would claim to be God. And then he gave the first initiation. And at the end of the initiation, he said, and the spiritual master should be worshipped as God. He turned around and left. And that was the end of the lecture. It shocked all these new devotees. Now he's saying he's God. Before he's saying we should think anyone who says he's God, he's dog. But there was one devotee who was a little advanced. He said, no. He said, we should see him on the same level of God. He's not saying he's God. He should be worshipped in that same way. Because when you worship the spiritual master that way, he takes your worship and gives it to Krishna. Because he's your connection with Krishna. You have that, you can't jump over your spiritual master to Krishna. It's not possible. So therefore, he remains your most dear object of worship because it's by his mercy, yasya prashada, bhagavad prashado, yasya prashada, nagatikuta. It's by his mercy only that you can get the Lord's mercy. There's no other way. Nagatikotopi means no other way. So when you honor, you can always honor your spiritual master anytime, any place, in any circumstances. That is considered to be proper Vaishnav understanding, etiquette. Yes. Yes, yeah, continue, Shasha.
So, if we are in temple, for example, and the gates are open and some Maharaj came in temple, should we, I don't know.
Generally, if it's not your spiritual master, no. Unless you have accepted that person as your Shikshu Guru, then it's also, because Shiksha and Diksha is the same thing. But generally, no. Better just to acknowledge his presence and go on with the worship. Yeah, just acknowledge his presence like that. But you don't even have to do that. That's not even required. Because you're worshiping the Supreme Lord, and that's perfect like that. Yes, Ananda?
I heard that on marginal level you develop taste for divine.
What's that?
That if you're on the marginal level, you start to develop taste for holy name.
You develop a taste for chanting the holy name? What do you think? I don't see the connection between Madhyamam and Namruchi. It's in the different levels of spiritual progress are more or less that when your taste starts to develop on the platform of Nishta, and when you start practicing Trinadapi Sanichena Tayari Vasahishnana, when you start practicing that, then you start developing a taste. And then when that develops, you become fixed in your process of chanting. There's no correlation between Madhyamam and taste that I know of any Shastra. Do you know of anything? The correlation between the Madhyam and... Yes?
Before a few days ago, a lecture by His Holiness Pradhananda Maharaj, he said that Madhyamadhikari is on level of Nishtha.
Then, okay, then if Madhyamankari is on the level of Nishtha, Nishtha means one is fixed. But it's not the platform of Ruchi. Ruchi is where the taste is constant. Nishtha is fixed in devotional service. He's not going to be deviated by material tendencies like that. He can still fall down, of course, but he's not deviated by material tendencies. So the question is, what level of chanting is he on? Is he beyond the offenseless stage into the clearing stage? Or is he beyond the clearing stage into the, what is the offenseless stage? Or is he on the stage of Namruchi, or chanting the pure name? So there's different stages of chanting also like that. So I would say he's on the platform of clearing. He's getting rid of the offenses like that. Yeah. Yes, Janaki Nath Prabhu. Could you stand up and so I could see you? Oh, there you are. Okay. Yeah, it does mention that Kanishka can also become a guru, right? Yeah, there's also gurus on the Kanishka platform, but they can't do much. If there's no Uttama available, there's no Madhyama available, then you can take a guru on the Kanishka platform. The thing is, you have to get a spiritual master. But you can also help your spiritual master advance. Yes, what it means. This in this verse it says that, yeah. That's why you have to know the characteristics of an Uttama before you can recognize an Uttama. You have to study those characteristics. That's why before accepting a spiritual master, one should be able to evaluate that person you are going to accept. There's an evaluation period, not that you immediately accept someone. The evaluation is to see if that person is qualified to be your spiritual master.
Could it be, Maharaj, that, you know, a spiritual master is traveling all around the universe, delivering his disciples?
Mm.
So then, could you send a representative who could be a Madhya platform?
Well, Krishna will, if you're looking for a spiritual master, Krishna will send you somebody. But he may send you a Madhyama Madhikari because Uttama Madhikari is just not available. Or he's not taking disciples. Gorkhishor Das Babaji Maharaj, he didn't want to accept any disciples. Who else? Bamsidhari Das Babaji. Many, many great souls, you know, Saranga Thakur. Lord Chaitanya told him, you know, take disciples. He said, I'm not qualified to take disciples. Lord Chaitanya said, yes, you are. Take disciples. And so, was it Saranga Thakur or Murari Chaitanya? Well, the next day he said, all right, Lord Chaitanya wants me to take disciples. Then the first person I meet the next day, I'll accept that person as my disciple. So he was bathing in the river, and while he was bathing, a dead body was floating in the river, and then he touched the dead body, and the dead body came alive, and then that person became his disciple. It was a 9-year-old boy who had died from a snake bite, and his body was thrown in the river, and then by touching this pure devotee, Saranga Thakur, that's how powerful he was. His life came back. His parents found out that their son, who had died of a snake bite, was now alive, and they asked him to come back home. He said, my real father is Saranga Thakur now. He has given me not only physical life, but real life, spiritual life. So, yeah. So, yeah, there's... But one has to seek out a an Uttama Madhikari. That's the injunction. That's from this verse we're reading here, verse number 5. Prabhupada explains that in the purport.
Also, Maharaj, Uttama Madhikari is mentioned they don't preach, but in this text, it's mentioned that they spread Krishna consciousness and
They come down to the Madhyamam platform. There's those who come from the Kanista to the Madhyamam, and then who's those who come from Uttama down to Madhyamam for the sake of preaching. They want to assist the Lord in his mission to claim the soul of fallen souls. So out of compassion for the Lord's desire, they make that sacrifice. Preaching is a big headache. I'm not complaining. Because preaching is like trying to give somebody something that they don't want. Most people don't want Krishna consciousness. What they want is they want God, but they want their material life too. So you have to tell them, hey, you know, it's not going to work. But they say, Maharaj, you're a fanatic. So preaching is like, you know, it's trying to feed sugar cane to a person who has jaundice. It's basically that thing. Sugar cane to a jaundice patient tastes very bitter. As Prabhupada said, you know, preaching is a very difficult task in Kali Yuga. You're telling people their life is not what they need. They need a new, different life. You're actually interfering with their plans for material happiness. And that's a big offense. So preaching is, we love to do it as a service to the Lord, but we also understand that it's very hard. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, Gaurgovinda Maharaj would always repeat in his lectures, Prabhupada would say it over time, to make one devotee, you have to shed 300 gallons of blood to make one person Krishna conscious. That's how hard it is. Because people don't want it. They want sense gratification. That's what they want. So in this age, it's very difficult to make a devotee. Very difficult. When we speak about devotee, one who is fixed in the process of Krishna consciousness. Whether they're grihastha or brahmachari, it doesn't matter, but one who makes Krishna their goal in life. That's a devotee. I want Krishna. That's it. We mentioned that. What do you want? Do you want Krishna or do you want what Krishna can give you? You have to ask yourself that question. Do you want what Krishna can give you? He can give you everything. Or do you want him? So then, if you want Krishna, then you're a devotee. If you want his energy, then you're a mixed devotee. And mixed devotees don't really, you know, can't really stay fixed. They totter. They go up and down. And then eventually, unless they go up, they eventually go down. Like that. Yes, Prabhu. Abhiram got mad and broke his stick. And Abhiram Thakur is Sridham. He's a cowherd boy in Vrindavan. He's come in Lord Chaitanya's pastime as Abhiram Thakur. He's one of the intimate associates of Krishna in Sakya Rasa in the spiritual world. He's not an ordinary person. He's so exalted that Krishna worships Sridham as his superior. He's one of the, Priyanarma Sakas. Those Sakas that are considered to be more advanced than Krishna even in the spiritual world. more advanced is that they're the highest forms of his friends. They're his best friends. And Krishna treats them as superiors. Sridham is one of them. Subal is another one like that. So yeah, Abhiram Thakur, he's not an ordinary person. So if he gets mad because somebody doesn't worship him, you should not think he's proud. You should think that person is unfortunate because they don't understand his position. Yeah, he broke his flute, yeah. And then that person immediately fell down as soon as that happened. Like that. Because he understood that Pujari didn't really appreciate Lord Nityananda. That was the story. That Pujari was worshipping Chaitanya but didn't have regards for Lord Nityananda. And Abhiram Thakur understood that and got angry. Like that. So even great souls get angry. Yes, Prabhu. That's so many. Is there any more hands? Okay, Beatrice is next. Husband first.
Disciples, and I think he likens them to different kinds of creatures. He says one guru treats these disciples like this, another like that. I don't know if you've heard anything like that before. You know,
this is an ISKCON thing, right?
No, I don't think so. I think it's from the previous acharyas.
Well, I've heard one spiritual master in the movement says that they treat their disciples like birds, turtles, and fish. Yeah. Do you remember the connection? I don't want to mention the spiritual master who said that, but I don't want to make his name public because he may not appreciate it. But he said it and he wrote it beautifully. And he explained that, some disciples you have to give a lot of attention to. Some disciples you have to check in every once in a while, and others you better leave them alone because if you bother them, they So these are the three kinds of animals like that. You not leave them alone because they're okay. They're making progress, and so you don't have to kind of like look after them all the time. It's nice if they check in every once in a while and let you know how they're doing like that. And others need that constant care or else they can't make advancement. And others, you can check in every once in a while like that and just, so. And those three types of animals have these characteristics. I can't remember. Yeah. Basically, that's the point. Yeah. I don't know. All I know is, all I know is I don't know everything. So, when it comes to disciples, you know, you have to see if they're, you know, following the principles. Most important thing about disciples is they're chanting their holy names. That's the thing. If they're chanting the holy names and they're following the four regulative principles, that's fine. If they're doing service, that's even better. Like that. But at least they should be chanting 16 rounds and following the four regulative principles. Like that. If they're below that standard, then you need to see what you can do to bring them up. That becomes a responsibility. Because it says that if the disciple doesn't go back to Godhead, then the spiritual master has to come back in the next life to save that disciple. So when Prabhupada was asked that, Prabhupada said, please don't make me come back. Please finish up in this life. If the disciple is still trying but is below the standard, then the guru is duty-bound to save his disciple. If the disciple gives up on the spiritual master, then the responsibility is broken. Then he's not responsible to come back and save that disciple. As long as the disciple is trying but is in a fallen condition, then the spiritual master has to do whatever he can to save, to bring that disciple up. Mm-hmm. That's his duty. Otherwise, don't accept disciples. Mm-hmm. It's not a business. Yeah, like that. So, different kinds of disciples. Beatrice? We mentioned that by engaging in the worship of the deity and developing those qualities of deity worship like that and associating with advanced devotees. Yeah, someone who's more advanced. If they associate with other kanistas, they won't go anywhere. Yes, if they only associate with kanistas, yes. Let's see... We got Savitri again, and then you're next. Somebody is what? Duplicious. Give up his duplicity. Stopping duplicious. And again, saintly association is the way to, you know, to overcome these anarthas. If a person is around for a long time but hasn't accepted a spiritual master, that may be something due to their previous karmas that doesn't allow them to actually make that next step. I've seen many people like that. There are many people who stay around our movement for years. I know somebody who's 25 years around our movement. He'll come, he'll do some service, but that's all. No guru. Don't mention guru to them. They like Krishna, they may even chant the holy name, but spiritual master, no. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's something in their karma that causes them to not to have that kind of faith. I know one devotee, I won't mention his name, at Bhaktivedanta Manor. You know who I'm talking about. He's been around for so long. He's a wonderful devotee. But no spiritual master. And you just don't mention it to him either. Someday he'll accept the spiritual master. But when that someday will come, we don't know. It's something. Either they're looking for something beyond what they are is available, or just like when Prabhupada left, a lot of devotees who came to a movement only wanted to accept spiritual masters that had Indian bodies, because they didn't trust anyone who was in the Western body. They're not advanced enough. But that's material. That's seeing in the material light. So, yeah. So there's something in that person's karma that doesn't allow them to move forward. Mm-hmm. Hopefully they'll change like that. Yes, Prabhu?
What does it mean to be a Prakrita devotee? Does this level align with any of the levels
of Kanishtha? Prakrita means Kanishtha. Yeah. Same thing. Materialist devotee. sees everything in a material way. Yes, Janaki Nath. Well, you can do that. You can accept someone within your heart that's disappeared, but at the same time, you still have to take formal initiation. Because without formal initiation, you're not connected to the parampara. So I know devotees in our movement whose spiritual master is departed, but they're initiated by another spiritual master. They gave their heart to that person. That person left the planet. They didn't take initiation from them. So they accepted another spiritual master in order to practice devotional service. That's okay. So the real spiritual master is the person who's departed. The one that's there, that they take an initiation one, is actually a replica or acting on behalf of their spiritual master. And that person should be worshipped in the same way, though. But that person who was acting as their spiritual master will not interfere with their loving relationship to that from that departed soul. In fact, he'll encourage that. Yeah. Real initiation's in the heart. The formal ceremony consummates what's in the heart. When you give your heart to a person who is qualified to give initiation, that is diksha. That's the real diksha. If the heart's not there and you take initiation, you're really not initiated. And Prabhupada also, there was one man, he came, he took initiation for Prabhupada, and the next day he left. And the devotee said, Prabhupada, he just took initiation and left. Prabhupada said he was never initiated. Because he really didn't give his heart. Therefore, the formal ceremony only consummates what's in the heart and makes you able to practice under the guidance. But if the heart is not surrendered to the spiritual master, initiation is just a word. Even if you have a name, you're not initiated. It's what's in your heart, and that comes out in your activities. Yes, you want to pursue that point some more? He says you have to drag him back. Tie him up and drag him. So we were looking for some more rope. Come on, Krishna wants you. No, Maya's more nicer. I like Maya. Just give me another 3 lives. I'll be all right. I just gotta have some of that sense gratification. Maya says, you're my disciple. Okay, go ahead.
I'm just trying to understand this, Maya. Some guru is like Prabhupada, so good
disciple. Right.
Does that mean Prabhupada? And also, what about in different universes then? How does a guru, does he expand himself?
Prabhupada says the spiritual master comes back, but it's not, you won't recognize him in the same form. He'll be your spiritual master, but he'll have a different external form. Like that. What was the example? I just had it, I lost it. Yeah, that's a good one. Oh, thank you. Chintamani. Bhavamanda Thakur, when he was attached to this prostitute, Chintamani, there's a whole beautiful story. how he came to see her in the middle of the night when there was a torrential rain. He crossed the river, raging river in the rain. He climbed the wall to get into her house. He was all broken up, beaten, wet, just to come to see this prostitute. It was on the same day that his father died, too. He didn't even go to the ceremony. He was so attached to the prostitute. She looked at him. She was thinking, she said to him, if you had as enough attachment to Krishna than you have to this body of mine, your life would be successful. But she wasn't speaking. It was his guru from his last life who spoke through the prostitute. His guru was Somagiri. And he mentions that in his first prayers in the Krishna Karnamrita, where he glorifies Krishna, Chintamani, and Somagiri as three guides in his spiritual life like that. And then as soon as he heard Chintamani, the prostitute, speak that, his whole attachment was broken right there. Boom, he lost all its attachment to Chintamani. He gave up everything. He went on his way to Vrindavan. But then again, he got attached again on the way. And that's another story. So, but eventually he made it to Vrindavan and he wrote the beautiful prayer, Krishna Karnamrita, which is Lord Chaitanya saw Krishna Karnamrita and Brahma Samhita as the two greatest Vaishnava scriptures. Krishna Karnamrita simply glorifies Krishna in Vrindavan. Beautiful, beautiful poetry. It's recommended devotees read that. How many have read that? Krishna Karnamrita? Yeah. Maharashi read it also? Yeah, it's really wonderful. Muradam, 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 muradam. Muradam means honey. And Krishna's body is like honey, but sweeter yet is his transcendental face, but even sweeter yet is the smiling on his transcendental face. So it's honey, more honey, sweeter honey, 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 honey. Until it's no longer interested in money, you're only interested in honey. Honey becomes the money, and money becomes funny. So that's what I do in my spare time anyway. So the point is that, you know, the spiritual master will work through different energies. And this is a good point, because one who sees his spiritual master in every situation is never lost. Prabhupada said, I see my spiritual master. He's teaching me. He's coming to me in different ways. Through my disciples, through my worship, he's always with me. He's never not with me. So that's a type of vision that we have to practice. Listening to the voice of your spiritual master through everything that you come in contact with. Then you're never outside of that contact. Like that. That's the mercy of Krishna, yes. Yes, Sridevi? That's minimum. Yeah.
But sometimes, you know, there are periods when a devotee may falter, come down to 12 rounds, or break one or two regulated principles, then again pick back up again, then again falter. So what is the fate of such a disciple?
Stop it. Give it up. See what causes you to fall down, and then work on that. It's a very powerful anartha that's, as Bhuta Bhavana was saying, if you keep doing the same thing over and over again, you're going to get the same results. I don't want to fall in Maya, but I don't want to change my activity. I don't want to go to jail, but I still want to steal. It's like saying the same, you know. I don't want to change, but still I don't like what I'm getting. Change! So the question is, all right, I got to change. And then if you can't figure out how to change, then the association of devotees, the Society of Krishna Consciousness, provides that kind of help. Take shelter of someone who can help you. I need help. See, that's the point. Pride means I can do it. Pride means I can do it. And when I don't do it, you know, I can't do it. So we have to give up this idea that I can do it. We have to think that I have the means to be successful, and it's in the association of devotees. It's by associating with devotees, hearing from devotees, serving devotees, getting advice from devotees. We'll talk about that in the fourth verse. The six loving exchanges between devotees. That'll be the class for Sunday feast. So, we need each other. Because if we don't associate with devotees, we will associate with the non-devotees. Okay. So, yeah. Fall down, get up. Fall down, get up. But stop falling down. A child will keep falling down, but it'll keep trying until it successfully learns to walk. So Prabhupada said the walking propensity is in the child through the practice of walking. Our propensity for Krishna consciousness is there within our hearts. We just have to bring it out. We have to bring it out, that's all. It's there. Everyone is naturally Krishna conscious. Your Maya or your material life is an anartha. It's false. It's not you. You're not this body. This world is not your home. And everything you have is simply an illusion. It's a fact. Who are you? Jivair Sudupai Krishnair Nityadas. You are eternally servant of Krishna, and you belong with him in the spiritual world and loving transcendental. That's reality. This world is not real. It's simply a prison house for those who somehow or other escaped Krishna's, you know, spiritual life. We're here in this world, and we're suffering. Even if we're not suffering physically or mentally, we're suffering in a greater way, and that is separation from our eternal lover, Krishna. That is the greatest form of suffering. To be separated from that person who loves you the most and whose love can fulfill you completely, that is the real suffering. So even though you may not be suffering materially, everyone is suffering on that platform of separation from Krishna. And it says that through chanting of the holy names of the Lord, there's a certain stage that you reach through that chanting. It's called contrition. You know that word, contrition? Contrition means I realize I'm so fallen. I left Krishna. What a fool I am. Tears come to your eyes. You feel so bad. I left that person who loves me the most, who is my eternal lover. And then the heart breaks and one feels totally lost and feels a sense of remorse. What a fool. And then, but that feeling and that experience inspires them in their devotional service, and then they make more advancement from that. It's a stage of ecstasy that comes by chanting the holy names like that. And that's mentioned by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati and Bhaktivinoda Thakur in the Shikshastakam prayers like that. Contrition, a sense of guilt of leaving Krishna. So, you know, we have to understand this world and for what it is. It's a place that we've been sent to because we left Krishna, that's all. We don't belong here. And most souls never leave Krishna. Only a small group or a small minority of souls go away from Krishna. The majority of the living entities in existence never leave the spiritual world. We are in the minority. So, Okay, so we made a mistake, a big one, and we're here. Now we have to get back. So don't worry about the mistake, worry about getting back. That's all. And Krishna, Prabhupada said, Krishna wants you to come back more than you want to come back. Therefore, he sends his spiritual master just to show his mercy towards the conditioned souls. Therefore, that's why they says the spiritual master is the mercy manifestation of Krishna, because he's bringing you Krishna, and that's what Krishna wants, the you to come back to him, so he gives you his mercy through his representative like that. And that's the only business of the spiritual master, is to bring the soul back to Krishna, that's all, somehow. And so therefore we teach, chant the holy names of the Lord, hear about the pastimes of Krishna, make your life connected to Krishna somehow. Yena kena prakarena mana Krishna nivesayat. Somehow or other, remember Krishna. Somehow. That's the verse from Bhaktivinoda Sindhu, yeah? Somehow or other, connect to Krishna. You're walking out the door and somebody pushes the door in your foot and your foot goes, and you go out, oh, Krishna! Wow, I remembered Krishna. Of course, that's the painful way. But that's what you needed. Somehow to remember Krishna. Because remembrance of Krishna is perfection. Forgetful of Krishna is imperfection. Like that. The soul cannot forget Krishna. The mind interferes with the soul's activity and makes us look towards the material for satisfaction. Therefore, the mind needs to be adjusted. And that's what nectar instruction is. It starts off, as Buddha Bhavana Prabhu talks about, the first one is mind and sense control. The second then is the proper attitude like that. So we'll hear some more. Tomorrow morning, Buddha Bhavana Prabhu will do verse number 6, which are dealings with devotees in the don't way. I just dealt with dealings and devotees and how to do it. And he'll deal with the devotees in the don't way. It's a very, very interesting verse. So please come for 8 o'clock class tomorrow. So I don't want to keep you any later. It's 9:30. I can continue, but I think he will interfere with Nidra Devi's program. Everyone needs to take rest so they can be fresh tomorrow. And I think there's some prasadam. So we'll stop here. I'd love to continue, but it's 9:30 and samsara dhavan halali dhaloka. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Harinam sankirtan ki. Krishna Prasad ki. Harinam sankirtan ki. Nectar of instructions ki.